Hello from the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, and welcome to Champion in Every Corner. By joining us today, you are actively helping us build a safe, rewarding sports community that prioritizes athlete well-being. You'll hear from experts in the field with innovative ideas to keep you engaged in the game. Join the conversation by sharing your ideas for topics at content@safesport.org.
One important note. Information about or reasonable suspicion of child abuse, including child sexual abuse, must be immediately reported to law enforcement and the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, and individuals must comply with any other applicable state or federal laws.
Today, in the second episode of our Minor Athlete Abuse Prevention Policies, or MAP, podcast series, we are excited to welcome Brandon McBain, Director of Membership Services and Programs of the National Wheelchair Basketball Association, Allison Kokoras, Safe Sport Administrator of U.S. Soccer, and Madeline Valla, Safe Sport Administrator of USA Track and Field, to discuss implementing the MAP. Happy listening and welcome all. Brandon, thanks for joining us today. Would you mind telling our listeners a little about yourself and your professional background?
Yeah. So my name is Brandon McBain, Director of Membership Services and Programs at the National Wheelchair Basketball Association. Been on staff for over 4 years and been with the organization for a little over 11 years. Got a undergrad in public relations from the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire and sport management degree from Springfield College in Massachusetts. Have a background in sport from American Hockey League to U.S. Pond Hockey Championships to Major League Baseball, but I found my passion in the Paralympic movement when I was fortunate to go to the 2010 Vancouver Olympic and Paralympic Games and was there for both of the games and really found my passion in Paralympic sport and found an opportunity within wheelchair basketball.
Great, thank you. We're so glad to have you and your expertise here today. So National Wheelchair Basketball Association really promotes a culture of compliance. How were you able to get your members on board?
I think it's kind of a prioritization from our leadership. A culture of safety is what we like to say, you know, prioritizing all athlete safety initiatives from Safe Sport to MAP to concussion training, basically anything that involves creating a safe and fun environment for our athletes. And we know there's a lot of policies, procedures, trainings and screenings and preventative measures to create that. But I think the importance of creating that safe environment for athletes to learn, play, and compete is something that our members value. And we as a leadership team has really showed them that we're going to put forth our best effort to educate them on it and then how we help them to uphold or adhere to those policies and procedures. So.
And throughout the process of really promoting the culture, did you experience any difficulties or challenges? Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, you know, obviously when the Safe Sport Code rolled out 2017, it was something new for our organization, and I would assume many sports organizations and NGBs. Education was key. And, you know, that's something that I thought the center did very well from resource materials they provided to just information. It was an ever-changing landscape, and it continues to be as we update and improve the process and policies. But I think one of the things that we really leaned into was making sure the communication was strong and making sure the communication was regular on providing those updates, but then providing those prompts to our membership. You know, one of the things we did was really built an integration into our registration process for reminders outside of just our regular communication. So one thing that we pride ourselves on is when an individual comes in and during the registration process, we already know that they're going to be prompted within the registration with acknowledgments of Safe Sport built into them for, you know, those parents and guardians for applicable junior athletes. To any adults that are applicable adults within our process, they're also seeing that information and acknowledging it. And then in addition to that, then they're provided the information upon completing registration or membership. And a detailed step of how they're supposed to go and complete Safe Sport or reference the MAP policies and pushing them to our resource that we have available. You know, the one pagers available from the center or other information that we feel that, you know, would be applicable for them to look at. But one of the challenges, I would say, to not saying it's all been gravy, one of the challenges I would say is obviously technology. And if you're sending stuff through electronic communications, stuff gets buried in spam or junk. And I think having the information sent out in newsletters, out on social media, you're having to use other methods of communication and not just be relying on, oh, we're just sending an email and hopefully they get it. And so I think caking it in those other communication manners, caking into resource materials that we give to our teams or our program leadership, so then they're filtering the information down. And then also down through our communication from our divisions, conferences, you know, and really educating the leadership. So it's the communication is driven down top to bottom. And so I think each of those helped us address that challenge, not to say it still doesn't exist, you know, and I still would say, you know, it's a wealth of information at times. So there's obviously the challenges of individuals comprehending how the policy might apply to them or their program. One of the other difficulties I would mention here, and I'm sure anyone watching this that is part of a sport organization, we have a very diverse membership. We have a membership that might be associated with a park and recs department, one that might be with a rehab hospital or a medical setting, one that might be a non-for-profit group, and one that might be just mom and dad running a team in Nebraska. So, and with that diverse membership, how they're going to be able to retain, apply, and adhere to the policies, it looks different for each of those. Because over here in a park and rec or medical setting, they might have from the top bottom from their organization to apply some standards or policies that they might have to adhere to. And so having the understanding of how when we're bringing in our MAP and code and our athlete safety measures and how they have to apply them in addition to maybe what they have. So I think it's a critical thing. And I think that's where it's important from our end to make sure we're here to be a resource and a conduit for the U.S. Center for Safe Sport and then our MAP. And then this team. And so it's kind of we're all only as successful as the group. And I think it's on us to make sure that we're supporting our members in that space.
So speaking a bit to your diverse membership, how do you work to promote equal access to all your athletes when addressing these new implementations?
Yeah, you know, I think going back to kind of some of my information or my comments on providing the information in a way that they would most likely digest information in this manner. And by that, I mean, if we're trying to reach out to a parent that is very active on social media, one of our prompts on social media, we're inviting them into maybe our page on athlete safety and digging around in it through there and directing them to the specific information on parent, you know, the parent training toolkit. Or for instance, you know, a team rep, which would be a kind of a leadership position for any team or program in our organization. They would be someone that we would provide them that information in a very direct communication to the team reps on a prompt reminder with a lot of the, should say, checklist items of, hey, make sure you're adhering to the MAP within your program. Hey, make sure your team is all completing Safe Sport training with their individual registration. And so I think having the information accessible through whatever their applicable role is and delivering kind of the applicable information to them, I mean, aside from that, I think we definitely have made it available in a variety of different manners on our website, on social, through email, And the probably the one that I wouldn't would be remiss to mention is we also had an athlete safety webinar just this last fall as we started up the season, and it was mainly focused around our athlete safety policies, safe sport training map. We did have some information on our background screening policy, which adheres to the USOPC background screening criteria with the National Center for Safety Initiatives, concussion training. So a variety of different things included in that webinar. And that was a recorded webinar that, again, we shared out to our membership. So again, there's a lot of different manners that people digest information, and we just want to make sure we're delivering it in a variety of different methods to hopefully capture everyone's eyes and understanding of all of this information.
Brandon, thank you for taking the time to sit down with us. We really appreciate your time and valuable insight on ways to help promote a strong culture of compliance.
I just want to say thank you for the U.S. Center for Safe Sport. You know, I think that anyone would say that this content, it can be very robust, and at times it can be a little overwhelming, and they've done a great job of creating resources to support organizations like the NWBA, so then we can educate others on the importance of athlete safety and just a safe environment for anyone to compete in sport. And so just want to say thank you to them on creating this, and also on the side of compliance. You know, I think it's important that you also have to have, for lack of better phrasing, you know, your big brother there looking over your shoulder, making sure you're doing things right. And so, and by all means, we encourage that. I think it's important for any sport organization to have that support and that oversight.
Allison, it's great to be speaking with you today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can you please tell our listeners a little about yourself and the work you do with U.S. Soccer?
Sure. So thanks, Vanessa. I am U.S. Soccer Safe Sport Administrator. I rejoined soccer, U.S. Soccer, in this role almost exactly a year ago, but I have a long history with U.S. Soccer. I've held a couple of different jobs with U.S. Soccer over the past 20 years, starting with a staff attorney job, and then I moved on to the general counsel role, and then was also the director of human resources with lots of breaks in between. And so I just rejoined this past year in the Safe Sport role. My academic background is in law, and I also play Division I college soccer. So I have a real passion about safe sport and making sure that our athletic experience is positive and safe.
Wonderful. Thank you. So in working to create a culture of compliance within U.S. soccer, what was it like implementing the map in your organization?
Well, at the time we were required to implement the first version of the map, it was actually great timing because U.S. Soccer at that time was running a national youth league. And so it provided this excellent opportunity to make these changes and actively engage with clubs across the country that were eager to engage with us and comply with the map in order to be a part of our league. And so the timing was great because in addition to just implementing it in our national team programs, we were able to sort of have our staff be at ground level with youth clubs across the country to talk about safety and prevention and implement the preventive elements of the map.
So what is one piece of advice you would give to other organizations as they begin to implement the map?
You know, I think it's really helpful to be encouraging and to recognize that mistakes are made at times, but that it really is a team effort to keep the sport safe. I try to emphasize that a lot in my daily interactions with our members, just to make sure that they understand that it really is a matter of everyone working together to keep the sport safe and to really encourage a team atmosphere where we're all trying to help out and look over each other's shoulders to make sure nothing slips through the cracks.
So throughout the process, did you encounter any challenges or difficulties, and can you share some of those with our listeners?
Sure. So implementing this new version of the map, the 2022 version, I don't think I would say pushback. I really have to give our members a lot of credit for embracing safe sport requirements. You know, I interact with them daily, and I'm always impressed by their commitment. But I will say that the rollout of the new map has presented a special challenge in that it's coming in the midst of a pandemic. And so a lot of our members, just like businesses all over the country, have really suffered staff cutbacks and cuts in their resources. And so it has presented an extra challenge to comply with some of the administrative requirements in light of what's going on with the pandemic and the financial hardships that our members are facing. So we try to provide as much support and assistance as we can as the national governing body and try to keep encouraging our members in light of these special challenges.
And are there ways in which you've been able to incorporate the athlete voice into the implementation?
Well, it's funny. We this week is our annual general meeting. And so just last night or yesterday afternoon, I did a full Safe Sport presentation for any of our members to join. I think we had over 70 participants in that presentation. And we also are educating our board of directors about the new map, which includes our athlete representatives. And we haven't done it yet, but we plan to present on our athlete council calls to update our athlete council on the map requirements too.
Allison, it was great chatting with you today. And thanks for sharing some really great information for our listeners.
No problem. Thank you.
Madeline, thank you for joining our podcast today. Can you tell our listeners about yourself and your professional background?
Thank you for having me. I currently work in USATF's legal department as USATF's Safe Sport Administrator. I've been with USATF for 2.5 years, having previously studied law and sport marketing and management at Indiana University Bloomington. In my free time, I also coach a 16s club volleyball team, and I'm a grassroots soccer referee in the Indianapolis area.
Great, thank you. So we know you and everyone at USATF have a goal to go above and beyond when it comes to implementing the map.
Yeah. So to start, when the center issues its finalized map that USATF and other NGBs are required to adopt, the center also notes recommended policy changes that the NGB is not required but can choose to implement. USATF chose to adopt those recommended policies during its 2019 MAP implementation and has chosen to adopt most recommended policies again for the 2022 MAP. This ensures that USATF is not only meeting minimum standards issued by the center, but that we're going above and beyond by implementing other proactive policies in an effort to minimize risk to athletes and members. In addition to that, it's important to note that USATF believes in creating a safe and healthy environment for all of our athletes and participants, not just our minors. So although the map was created with minor athletes in mind, USATF strongly encourages all of its athletes to be familiar with the policies and to use similar safeguards where and when appropriate. So in this regard, yes, USATF, you know, applies the map primarily to minors, but also caters to a broader audience, and we use it as a guideline for other adults and participants. So with that being said, when USATF first implemented the 2019 version of the map, it was important to make sure that first, you know, internal departments and constituent leaders were aware of the changes that were going to be made to our existing policies, and then second, that we got the appropriate feedback on how to best implement these changes for their respective groups in order to maximize understanding and buy-in. So once that happened, you know, constant communication from the national office to our membership was important to make sure that our members understood the nature of the changes from our existing policies to those that included the new map and how it affected them. So with all of this in place, implementing the first version of the map, you know, went smoothly, and we're currently implementing similar strategies this time around for the 2022 map.
How will you include your LAOs in the map implementation?
So for background, USATF defines LAOs to be its local clubs. So with upwards of 3,500 clubs across its 56 member associations, USATF relies very heavily on creating communications and resources and distributing them throughout the associations down to the member clubs. So to do this, USATF will use what we call the Association Safe Sport Volunteer Coordinator, ASVC for short, at each of these member associations. One of the responsibilities of the ASVC is to disseminate information from the national office down to the grassroots club programs. ASVCs and I meet regularly during the year via Zoom conferencing, so there is always a channel of communication, not only coming down from the national office with new updates, policy changes such as the MAP, but also traveling back up from the local grassroots club programs, what is or isn't working in your local association, and how can USATF National Office help you? So the ASVC position comes in handy for these types of policy changes.
With the MAP implementation, can you tell our listeners about some of the challenges or difficulties you faced and how you're overcoming them?
Yeah, that's a great question. So with any change, there are always going to be questions from our members. You know, why are these policies being made? Whom does it affect? When will these policies take effect? So if we're good about jumping on those questions early via our various communication strategies, months in advance of the new policies becoming effective, we can mitigate bumps in the road to the MAP implementation.
And how do you work to make documents such as the code and the MAP understandable for your members?
So it's important for our members to understand both the center's code and the MAP so that they not only understand, what types of conduct is considered prohibited conduct, as well as the process for investigating and resolving allegations of misconduct under the code, but also so that they understand the types of conduct that is designed to prevent certain circumstances that may expose minor athletes or other members to risk, which are the MAP policies. These are equally important documents. So in order to make these documents understandable for our members, USATF uses a variety of communication strategies. And we definitely recognize that we may not be able to communicate, to a minor athlete in the same manner that we may be able to communicate to an adult official or an adult coach. So we have to make sure that we're not only reaching all of our members, but breaking down each of these documents and communicating them in a way that our members can digest and understand. So, for example, we notice that our older audience is more responsive to email and physical mail communications. So we send a monthly Safe Sport newsletter that includes information on a variety of topics. The most recent newsletter included a Meet the MAP section, and in addition to information on the center's code. For our younger audience, we notice more of a presence on social media. So we use Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as communication methods and pull certain policies within the code or the MAP and post them via social media to highlight them throughout the year. In a normal year, we also make sure to have a presence at championship events with a staffed Safe Sport table where we offer USATF-specific Safe Sport-related resources, where we talk to athletes and their parents, officials, coaches, to answer any questions about USATF Safe Sport program and to be an advocate for Safe Sport. And then lastly, USATF always has the most up-to-date information with helpful resources posted to the Safe Sport section of its website.
As we wrap up our conversation today, Madeline, how have you seen the MAP shift the culture surrounding minor athlete safety with USA Track and Field?
So when USATF issued its first version of our Safe Sport Handbook, which included Safe Sport policies and procedures back in 2013, since that time, there have been a handful of changes to USATF Safe Sport Handbook. But we're noticing that the inclusion of prevention policies in recent years has really taken USATF Safe Sport program to the next level. So culture shifts don't result from a specific event, such as the implementation of the MAP into your existing policies or even the completion of, one Safe Sport training, but instead will derive from our members' positive experiences with the MAP or with what they learned from their training that perhaps challenges their previous beliefs, that the way that they were doing things before was the correct way. So this shift towards a safer environment for athletes is gradual and is going to continue to be gradual. And we're always looking for new ways to continue to be a leader in this area. So as USATF continues to create resources, communications, even participating in podcasts such as this, talking about the MAP, we will continue to better the environment for our minor athletes and for our members.
Brandon, Allison, and Madeline, thank you for joining us today to continue our Year of the MAP podcast. For our listeners, stay tuned for future episodes. We will be featuring different guests throughout the year who will address MAP-specific questions for local affiliate organizations, coaches, parents, and athletes. One final important note. If you know of or suspect abuse or misconduct, please report it anytime, anywhere, at our Report a Concern portal at uscenterforsafesport.org. If you have confidential or anonymous questions, contact the Safe Sport Helpline at safesporthelpline.org. Thanks for listening. Tune in next time and visit our website to hear more episodes.